Now, breaking news from the Talk of Connecticut, WDRC AM 1360, and now 103.3 FM.
Good morning, I'm Sean Murphy. Sunshine today with a high in the 50s. A person jumped from a second floor window to escape a house fire in West Hartford last night. The fire chief said the person was taken to the hospital for non-life-threatening injuries. The blaze broke out at a multifamily home on Elmhurst Street. Firefighters put it out in about 6 minutes. The cause of the blaze remains under investigation. A motorcyclist was arrested after allegedly speeding, driving recklessly, and fleeing from police in Manchester on Tuesday. State police said the motorcyclist got onto Interstate 84 West and continued onto I-384, where he was clocked driving 130 miles per hour. Police stopped their pursuit because of the dangers it could have posed to the public. Authorities arrested the motorcyclist, 45-year-old Paris Perry, at his home yesterday. He's facing multiple charges. State lawmakers are considering a measure that would require all Connecticut employers to guarantee paid sick days to all workers. The legislation passed the House yesterday and is now awaiting approval from the Senate. Current state law requires large employers with more than 50 workers to guarantee paid sick days. The legislation, House Bill 5005, would eventually apply that standard to all employers, including those with just one employee. A fire damaged a residential building in Hartford yesterday. Two families, which consisted of a total of five adults, were displaced due to the blaze at the Vine Street building. No injuries were reported, and the cause remains under investigation. I'm Sean Murphy. When news breaks, we break in.
And now, the Talk of Connecticut traffic.
In Farmington, you're moving slow. I-84 eastbound, exit 37 to 39. In West Hartford, you're slow. I-84 eastbound, exit 43 to 48. In East Hartford, you're slow. I-84 westbound, exit 53 to 48. Also, Route 2 westbound, exit 4 to exit 2. I'm Eddie Schaefer, Time Saver Traffic.
And that's the latest traffic on the Talk of Connecticut, AM 1360 and FM 103.3.
From the Talk of Connecticut Weather Center, a sunny day today. Temperatures 55 to 60 after a frosty start. Clear tonight, 30 to 35. Sunshine, low 60s tomorrow, and mostly sunny, 60 to 65 on Saturday. Sunday, partly sunny, 65 to 70, and partly sunny, upper 70s Monday. That's your latest forecast. I'm meteorologist Bill Jackwoman on the Talk of Connecticut. From the Talk of Connecticut Weather Center, sunshine for today, temperatures 55 to 60, clear, frosty, cold tonight, low 30s, and sunshine, low 60s tomorrow. On Saturday, mostly sunny, low 60s, and partly sunny, 65 to 70 Sunday. That's your latest forecast. I'm meteorologist Bill Jackwoman on the Talk of Connecticut. Afternoon, 3, 2, 1. From the Talk of Connecticut Weather Center, sunshine this afternoon, 55 to 60, clear, frosty cold tonight, low 30s, and sunny low 60s tomorrow. On Saturday, mostly sunny, low 60s. On Sunday, partly sunny, 65 to 70. And warmer Monday, partly sunny, 75 to 80. That's your latest forecast. I'm meteorologist Bill Jackwoman on the Talk of Connecticut. Evening 3, 2, 1. From the Talk of Connecticut Weather Center, clear skies, frosty cold tonight, 30 to 35. Plenty of sunshine tomorrow, 60 to 65. Tomorrow night, mostly clear, 35 to 40. And Saturday, most sunshine and temperatures, 60 to 65. Sunday, partly sunny, upper 60s. And partly sunny Monday, warmer, 75 to 80. That's your latest forecast. I'm meteorologist Bill Jackwoman on the Talk of Connecticut.
infamous YouTube channel. It's what? She participates regularly on a group men's issues podcast known as Honey Badger Radio and has given presentations on feminism, men, and masculinity across America. Good morning. It's Gary Byron, 7-Eleven here on this Friday Eve. Glad to have you on board the old morning train. Let's welcome back to the show Karen Strian. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, you know, I'm doing good. It's 5:10 a.m. here, but I'm always up at this hour anyway. So.
Oh, well, did you know you were going to be with us, right?
Oh yeah.
Okay. I take it.
Yeah, but I didn't have to get up extra early to be on.
Oh, that's good. I guess.
Yeah.
So tell us what's going on.
Well, what's going on? Are we talking about Title IX?
Yes.
Oh, well, geez. So they have amended the text of Title IX to include discrimination based on not just sex, but based on gender identity and sexual orientation. And that will basically make it so that all of the sexual assault guidelines sent down to universities and public schools by the federal government, any publicly funded school, will have to protect those individuals as well as just women. But they did not put any kind of text in there addressing transgender women in women's sports, so biological males engaging in women's organized sports. So nobody's happy with it.
Right.
Nobody's happy with it. Republicans are largely not happy with it because they don't believe that, and it's true, I've actually spoken with the woman who was responsible for Title IX, who pushed the government to pass it, and she said it was about equal opportunities to mostly play sports and things like that in universities. It was not about sexual assault, protecting people from sexual assault and sexual harassment. That was not part of what she intended, and it's not part of what Congress originally intended. Mm-hmm. So Republicans, they would. Oh, and the reforms mm-hmm. also they get rid of all of Betsy DeVos's, the former Secretary of Education, mm-hmm. all of her reforms that supported the rights of the accused. And put back in place all of the horrific rules sent down by Ruslan Ali, who was head of the department or deputy head of Department of Education under Obama. So you're really looking at this sort of battle over protecting women from sexual assault. And what's very upsetting about this is anything that has been presented in one of these tribunals where these young men who've been accused, they're not allowed to have representation. They're not allowed to not answer questions. They're not allowed to do any of that. And then police can actually take everything that was said there and bring it to an actual prosecution. And the level of the burden of proof in these universities is a preponderance of evidence. It's basically 50.01% sure or likely that he did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you're talking about ruining lives.
Yeah.
So
the Supreme Court allows enforcement of the Idaho ban on gender affirming care for transgender minors, and the Idaho measure, which seeks to, you know, block treatments such as puberty blockers and hormone therapy. Well, it's one of more than 20 enacted by conservative states targeting care for transgender youth. And then you have the liberal agenda is getting turned back in about half the states. And yet they keep targeting kids?
This is what really upsets me because when I was growing up, I actually still am, a tomboy, right? Yeah. And so if I had been like 5 years old in kindergarten, you know, playing with Legos and trucks and things like that, and an adult in a position of trust had come up to me and suggested that maybe I'm a boy, and maybe I'd be happier as a boy, and, you know, wouldn't I like to be a boy, because, you know, I could be a boy, that actually might have initiated in me, that might have generated gender dysphoria. Mm-hmm. Right? That might have made me deeply dissatisfied and distressed about having been born in the wrong body. And so I'm looking at what they're doing, and I think that this is all in some cases it's not about, you know, a social contagion or, you know, suggestibility at a young age. But I think a lot of it now, when you just look at the numbers, right, the statistics, and how, you know, we're right in the asymptote, at the tip of the asymptote here now, you know, the curve is going like straight up. We're looking at a situation where these kids are, I think they're being converted because of their susceptibility, and the idea that you can not let a kid drive a car until he's 16, not let a kid give his life for his country until he's 18, not let him sip a beer or in some cases smoke until he's 21, right? Not get a tattoo until he's 16, right? Not make permanent changes to his body. Like, I'm sorry, but okay, but then at age 12, he can decide that he wants to go, or she, to go on puberty blockers, right?
Are they deciding are the school officials deciding that for him? You know, or parents? I mean, I can't imagine parents pushing their child in that direction. Usually parents are the last to find out. It's usually some school official that is the first one to be aware of this.
You'd be surprised at some of these parents out there. You know, like, I think that this is going to turn into kind of a, I don't know if your listeners are familiar with the term Munchausen syndrome by proxy.
No, I'm not sure.
It's when a mother, usually a mother, but sometimes a father, will intentionally make their child sick. Like, they'll feed them Ipecac or, you know, give them some kind of drug to give them symptoms, and then take them into the emergency room and say, I don't know what's wrong with my child, in order to get attention, in order to get, you know, somebody to feel sorry for them. And so basically, I think that this is what's going on in places like, you know, Hollyweird, where you go out to dinner with, you know, a bunch of these Hollywood celebrities, and they're all bragging about their transgender kids, you know, and it's just like, it's like a new fashion. It's a new way to be special. It's a new way to get attention. And it's, I just think it's deeply problematic. And these kids, I'm just waiting for the wave of lawsuits to come through, to, you know, to start. Because detransitioners exist, they are mostly suppressed. Their voices are mostly suppressed. It's very hard to find anyone willing to listen to them on a national platform. Mm. 60 Minutes did one piece on detransitioners, and, you know, the level of preliminary care that these kids go through, in terms of, you know, before they make the decision to do something really permanent with their bodies, like castration or a mastectomy, sometimes that's just an hour of outpatient there, sitting down with a psychologist, and then they get the green light to change that, to have surgical sex change.
I can't believe it's that fashionable. I mean, where's the moral compass for a lot of these parents? A fad? Well, a fad is only a fad. I mean, shag carpet was a fad. Bell bottoms were a fad. They were in for a few years, and that came out. You know, I mean, this is permanent. This is irreversible. That's not a fad. That's permanent.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of these things, like puberty blockers, aren't actually, they weren't developed for that, and they've never been you know, given, put through randomized double-blinded clinical trials for use in children. They were actually originally developed to block sex hormones to slow very aggressive sex hormone-driven cancers. So if you had a really aggressive hormone-driven breast cancer, they would give you these, you know, what they would give girls to block puberty. And then they started being used for precocious puberty, and I can understand that. A six-year-old with an adult's capacity to get pregnant and an adult's sex drive, right, is not something that you necessarily want. You're gonna just asking for all kinds of trouble. So they would put them on puberty blockers until they were of pubertal age. But what's happening now is, I mean, they're now finding out that puberty blockers actually do make permanent changes to the body. If you have a child-sized penis and you are on puberty blockers for years when you should have been going through puberty, going off them does not reinitiate puberty. You missed your window. You're stuck with, you know, a child-sized penis for the rest of your life.
All right, we got to take a short break right here. We're going to come right back more with Karen Stratton right when we come back. Stay with us.
When shopping for appliances, where do you stop first? A big box store? They might be your first stop, but Ferrari's Appliance will be your last. From laundry to dishwashers, stoves to refrigerators, Ferrari's Appliance has all the name brands at the price you can afford. And they install and service everything they sell. Enough with the pushy salespeople and impersonal customer service. Head to Ferrari's Appliance in Newington or Naugatuck and discover why people from all over choose them over everyone else. Online at ferrarisappliance.com.
Liz Toyota of Manchester April Saving Event. Special financing rates as low as 1.99% and $1,000 rebates on new Toyota Tundras. Always a large selection of new and pre-owned Toyotas available. All vehicles come with total Liz care to serve you after the sale. For 53 years, Liz Toyota of Manchester. Special APR and rebates to qualified buyers through TFS. Up to 48 months, tax title, reg fees, and dealer conveyance fee of $499 not included.
Number one for breaking news for Vernon, Farmington, and South Windsor. The Talk of Connecticut. AM 1360 and FM 103.3.
All righty. 24 minutes after the hour of 7, we're talking with Karen Stratton. She's a critic of feminism and an advocate for men's rights. You know, I look at this. Are we getting any data yet from kids who maybe were part of the first wave and are now, I guess, regretting it is I don't want to say too strong, but maybe it's let's use that word. They're regretting the transformation that they had taken a couple of years ago.
It's very hard to find data. You can find individuals. There's a channel on YouTube, I believe it's called Benjamin Boyce, and he's actually got a lot of really good videos regarding the all of the furor at that Oregon University when they had the big it was years ago, but he's been talking with detransitioners. Right, and I try not. I don't watch them often because they're just depressing. It's just so sad to see kids that were kind of led down a garden path by the adults who were supposed to be protecting them, and allowed to do things to their bodies that they can never undo, and now they want to live. You know, there was one, he said, you know, like, I want to live as a man, but my voice is permanently changed and I'll never be any taller than I am right now. Mm-hmm. I'm as tall as I was when I was 14, and that's not going to change. I'm never going to have, you know, the muscle mass that I should. And I have to take testosterone for the rest of my life. Right. But I waited until after the window of puberty, which is, you know, the normal age when kids go through puberty. If you don't go through that during that period of time, then you're not going to go through puberty no matter what hormones you take. So it's just so sad to see some of these kids, like these people who made these decisions as children or even as young adults, 18, 19, 20, right? Long before their brains have fully developed. That usually happens between 23 and 25. And before they're, you know, I mean, show me a teenage girl, show me a teenage boy for that matter, who is totally confident and comfortable with her body.
Yeah, well, not at that age, no one is.
No one. I mean, your armpits smell, and you're starting to have BO, and you got zits, and you got, you know, everything's coming out different than you envisioned. You know, you thought you were going to look like a model, and instead you look dumpy and weird, right?
Well, that's me every day.
And most transgender people, transgender youth, after they go through puberty, they resolve their gender dysphoria and they just mostly become gay adults, but mostly just become straight or cisgender adults, right? Their gender dysphoria resolves. And so, I mean, this is like, we're talking 85%, and this was like 10 years ago. Uh-huh. So we're preventing nature's cure.
You mentioned Hollywood before the break and how it's vogue. It's the hip new thing, and to talk about your transitioning child. Okay, so Hollyweird has been that way for a while. But let's talk about the average everyday person in the United States or Canada even, you know, where they're far removed from Hollywood. Why would a parent encourage and assist their child, their adolescent child, from something that is irreversible? To your point, you can't get a tattoo till you're, what, 18. You can't drink till you're 21. You can't join the military, you know, until you're 18. You can't drive until you're 16. Okay, there's reasons for that. Argue them all you want. There's reasons for them. But yet, a child can make, you know, an irreversible change to their body and make this decision at 12, you know, or even younger for that matter, and nobody seems to have a problem with that. Okay, so let's take Hollywood out of it. I only have 1 minute, but if you can answer that, where's this coming from?
Well, I think you know, if you look at the stats on mental health and political affiliation, you'll find that the more progressive you go on the spectrum, the more likely you are to suffer some form of mental illness that's actually being treated with, you know, meds or with therapy. So you're looking at, I think, a Munchausen by proxy type thing going on with some of these parents who often start their kids before their kids are even 3 years old, them on gender bending and all of that. So.
So it has nothing to do with, oh, we wanted a daughter, but we got a son. If they got the daughter, whatever it is, they want the opposite for. So So basically what you're saying, if I understand correctly, is the political liberalism is a mental health.
It's correlated with mental health problems.
There you go. You have a mental health problem if you're a liberal. We got it right from the professional here. All right, Karen, you can go back to bed. We're sorry for the early call. I forgot all about the 2-hour time difference. Next time we get you.
No worries. I actually have to go shave my husband's head now.
Oh, so. Well, I don't want to prevent you from shaving anybody. Thanks for your time this morning. We'll chat soon.
News, I'm Gianna Gelosi. Former President Donald Trump met with construction.
Number one for breaking news for Vernon, Farmington, and South Windsor. The Talk of Connecticut. AM 1360 and FM 103.3.
4.5% raise for state union employees. Now, look, some people... they're not all getting six-figure salaries. I mean, there are people who work for, you know, departments that are not making much at all. Our mind always goes towards, you know, the upper management supervisory positions and, you know, this the six-figure or well into the six-figure salary. But they're getting a raise, too. And this dig is more to them. Pause. Democrats just passed the 4.5% raises. Isn't that great? Yeah. Pause. Oh, I'm sorry. I was reading from Biden's teleprompter. 8:11 here on this Friday Eve. It's Gary Byron. Welcome aboard the old morning train, as I say. Our next guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair joins us every other Thursday. He is the Senate Republican leader here to discuss this and more as someone I know who doesn't need a teleprompter in order to know that we are living in the bizarro world. Everything that we were told, that we were taught, is now accepted and not only accepted, encouraged in the way of life that we used to, you know, think was a noble and you know, morally acceptable and is now, well, not the way to be. Let's just put it that way. Let's welcome back to the show Senate Republican leader Steve Harding. Senator, good morning.
Gary, good morning. Always great to be on with you, sir. Right. And you hit the nail on the head with starting it out on, you know, what I think is important to start out with and having your listeners, you know, hear and discuss and contemplate is the CVAC agreement that we passed just 2 days ago. And, you know, the 4.5% increases for next fiscal year, you know, then that, you know, just to note, you know, we are talking about the budget constraints we have. The Democrats are trying these efforts to move around the fiscal guardrails that are so important to our state that has kept us, you know, somewhat fiscally responsible over the past few years. And, you know, the ways that they're looking to do that is to play gimmicks, play games, you know, go outside the spirit of what those guardrails are. This contract, just for this fiscal year alone, is a $120 million, you know, bump. Now, that's $120 million we could have used on so many other investments, nonprofits, other social services, different programs throughout the state, most importantly, giving it to our educational systems, which are in need, which also help alleviate property taxes back in our hometowns by providing state funding to education. I mean, these are all areas which would, in my opinion, be far wiser investments than giving salary increases that we just simply can't afford right now.
Yeah, and you know what, Steve? You nailed it. I mean, for those of you at home keeping score, I just want you to pay attention to something. This is a more than 30% cumulative raise.
Yes.
For the state and union employees. I'm going back over 4 years. 4 years, and I also want to include, remember those bonuses? Was it last year? They were just bonus. It wasn't even part of the union agreement or union raise. This was just a bonus. So in 4 years, let me tell you, I've been at this radio station 5 years. I'll start my sixth in July. I haven't received a 30% increase over four of my 5 years. That's pretty sweet. That's a great deal, dude. Wow.
And I think that we need to put that in perspective, Gary, because I think, you know, when you were in the legislature and you and I, you know, were fighting the good fight together, the CBEC did come to us and they had said, you know, we haven't seen raises in X number of years. The state was in much worse fiscal shape at that particular time. And, you know, they were making the pitch that they should receive these increases because they haven't received increases in a number of years. They've come to us now saying we want a 4.5% increase. And that is, when you consider that 4.5 collectively, that is a 30% increase, actually a 33% cumulative increase since Governor Lamont has been in office. And it comes down to not necessarily what's deserving, because there are many employees within this union that I would admit are very deserving. There's Department
right,
of Corrections
officials.
And I said
that, yes.
Yeah, and we all admit that there are many hardworking individuals that are certainly deserving. But we have to be cognizant to our constituents and the fact that this is their money that we're saying you as our constituency, our neighbors, you have to fit this bill. So ultimately what it comes down to is not necessarily deserving. It's, hey, what can we afford? And it's I'm hard-pressed. And I think any senator or any representative should be hard-pressed in looking at their neighbor in the eye and saying, I believe you can afford to fit a 33% increase over this six-year span of time. When you look at your own household income, and to your point, Gary, no one is seeing that type of increase in their pay.
That's incredible. 30%
in
4 years.
If you compound the inflation that we see in this country, their budgets are getting tighter and tighter by the day, yet we're having them also pay for this increase over a cumulative six-year period of time.
Yeah, well, how is this sustainable? And did they come in asking for more? You know, maybe they only wanted 2% and they asked for 4.5% to start, figuring that, you know, they'll just get knocked out. Do you know how much they originally asked for?
No, that I don't know, because that, as you know, is negotiations with the, you'd have to ask the governor's office, because ultimately they negotiate, as you know, with the governor, and then the legislature simply ratifies or rejects what the governor and the unions negotiate. So what their arbiters or what their, you know, representatives or leadership came in originally to the governor's office and asking for, and what they ultimately, well, we know what they got, but what they originally asked for, that's a good question. I don't know if this was their first ask or if they were talked down at all and into the 4.5%. You know, that's you know, a question I'd certainly like to know from the governor's office. But, you know, interestingly enough, speaking of that, Gary, you know, and I think I mentioned this last time I was on, you know, many of the UConn employees were in this bargaining unit, or many of these UConn employees were in the CBAC that ultimately got negotiated. Now, we as a state can say to UConn, hey, look, you have to work individually with the university. You can't negotiate. We're not going to have you negotiate with the governor's office. But the governor's office, or the union, went straight to the governor's office and negotiated with them. And what the problem is UConn is screaming for lack of funding right now, and they were completely bypassed by the governor's office. That is, you know, frankly, the governor's office could have said, no, you got to go back to your own university, who's ultimately fitting the bill for this, or much of this, to negotiate your contracts. But I think they knew they were going to get a better deal from the governor's office, so they went straight there, and the governor ultimately negotiated with them.
Oh, he did. I thought he had turned his back to him.
He ultimately, the UConn employees came in and negotiated under this agreement.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
the governor could have, you know, sent them back and said, no, you have to negotiate with the university itself, which I would argue makes much more fiscal sense, because the university itself is trying to manage their own budget.
By the way, I was really happy to see that you and the Republicans condemning the pro-Hamas anti-Semitism that we're seeing in our, well, in our country. Talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, it's. I think, frankly, it's very easy. It should be very easy for any American to get behind and supporting Israel here and condemning any demonstration here in our country and across our state that is in support of Hamas. You know, Hamas is a terrorist organization that committed and was complicit in the massacre that occurred on October 7th. It is an enemy of the United States of America. It's the enemy of Israel. It's the enemy of many Western countries across the globe. They are committed to hurting our own citizens, hurting our country, and no one should be supporting their efforts at all.
And you also continue to highlight how there's really no accountability for all the car thefts in this state. It's up, I think, like 33% just this year. Oh, my goodness.
You're seeing, and I think it speaks ultimately to crime, unfortunately, across our state. We have had, and you've seen this, Gary, firsthand, you've been great in exposing it, the Democrats supporting policies which have stripped authority, stripped control, stripped latitude away from police officers who are doing the best they can to protect ourselves and their communities. And unfortunately, these policies, you're starting to see the results of them. That, you know, you're seeing car thefts go up, you're seeing violent crime go up, you're seeing juvenile crime go up.
Right.
And unfortunately, there's not only an attitude not to, frankly, address the issue at hand, But frankly, you know, there's policies that the Democrats are indirectly supporting and continue to indirectly support that are putting us in this particular situation.
All right, this is what I want to do. I don't have to take a break for like another 2 minutes, but I'm going to take it early because when we come back, I want to get on a roll and I don't, you know, uninterrupted. And I'm going to talk about, let's talk bad bills. All right.
Okay.
We're going to take one short break right here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some bad bills more with Senate Republican leader Steve Harding right after this.
You love your truck. So give your truck the best at Ron's Automotive, the truck accessory superstore. Keep trucking. Ron's Automotive has everything to get the most out of your truck, including custom bumpers, ladder racks, tonneau covers, WeatherTech mats, performance brakes and exhaust, plus custom wheels and tires. Keep trucking. Rev it up at Ron's Automotive, 22 Thomaston Road, Litchfield. Online at ronsdashauto.com.
Think identity theft won't happen to you? Think again. There's a new victim every 3 seconds in the U.S., over 15 million this year alone, and many don't even know they're victims. LifeLock alerts you to identity threats you could miss even when you monitor your credit. If your identity's stolen, a dedicated U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. No one can prevent all identity theft, but everyone can save up to 25% their first year with my name, Clay, as the promo code at LifeLock.com.
The voice of reason, Gary Byron and Joe the producer on the Talk of Connecticut, WDRC AM 1360 and 103.3 FM.
All right, 22 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock, our guest is Senate Republican leader Steve Harding. Steve, I know you guys are right now in session. You are in chamber session and you're both chambers, both bodies, House and Senate are voting on bills. Let's discuss some bad bills right now. Democrats want to mandate that mom and pop small business owners actually provide sick leave even if they have one employee. And let's say that one employee is part-time. You still got to give them what's equivalent to what? A 40-hour work week. Explain this. This is insane.
It is. It is just, you know, and here's an example of policy which, you know, is not thought through at the least. Because, look, it sounds nice, and I understand that the cause is noble and that, you know, obviously we feel terrible for any individual that gets sick, that is going to have difficulty, you know, paying the bills and trying to deal with a terrible illness at the same time. Every good person is going to have sympathy for that individual. But when you create policy that says that a mom and pop operation that has a part-time employee would have to, pay for paid sick leave, which means that pay for that individual to not be at work and then pay for another individual, presumably to do their job while they're away. That is beyond crippling to a small business operation. It honestly can set it up to completely shut down. And that is the majority of our businesses that foster and bolster our economy throughout the state are mom and pop small business operations. These are not millionaires. These are our fellow neighbors that are middle class individuals simply trying to make ends meet. And when you put that type of mandate on those businesses, you can close the doors for good. And it's one less dollar and one less penny that's going into, in many cases, a very middle-class, blue-collar household. It is just policy, again, with I understand the cause is noble. We all feel terrible for any individual that has to go through something like that. But when you think through the policy, just one step on who you're putting that burden on, it should become very obvious of why that policy should never be implemented, yet it continues to be promoted by some.
I was a small business owner for 30 years. I'd love to hear from small business owners, whether you've ever called this show or not. I just want to know how that will directly impact you and your business. All right, so more bad bills. What's this green monster climate bill, and how much is it going to cost? I mean, it's all right. Let's start with that because I've heard of this green monster. I don't know exactly what it is though.
And here's the problem, Gary, is that those that are promoting it don't even know exactly what it is.
Well, okay,
and,
then.
And when you say, you know, what is this going to cost? We don't know. It could cost us millions millions. It could take millions across the state out of our pockets and our wallets and our pocketbooks. Because basically, what it really does is it basically gives unilateral authority to the Department of Environmental Protection's commissioner to enact whatever policy basically they see fit to cap greenhouse gas emissions. That can mean gas taxes. That can mean the TCI program that we heard about a few years back, which would have put 20, 30 cents a gallon onto your gas costs already as you fill up your tank. I mean, so when you say, what does this cost? What does this do? Anything. Basically anything. We're handing over the keys to the kingdom to a unelected bureaucrat mm-hmm. to implement any sort of economic policy they see fit in their opinion that would help curb greenhouse gas emissions. So the thought of that being scary is an understatement. The taxes, I really would question how you're logically thinking through the bill and thinking about what that would do to your constituents.
I think what's on everybody's mind, what they want to know is this EV mandate. Is it going to get stuck? Let me ask you, you think it'll get stuck in the implementer?
Well, every bad bill seems to. So, yeah. You know,
that's why I asked.
So I would certainly hope not. But, you know, I've seen, as you have seen, many bad bills get put through and
in the implementer.
It would be an easy thing for the Democrats to put in an implementer because ultimately it would be baked into so many other bills that it wouldn't be highlighted because it's a bad vote and the Democrats know it's a bad vote.
All right. What's past or what's on the go list that maybe is flying under our radar a little bit that you think our listeners should be aware of?
Well, what passed last night was Senate Bill 2. And it's a comprehensive bill that regulates AI. And I think we all believe that AI should be regulated in some mm-hmm. fashion, obviously. But on a state-by-state basis, doesn't seem to make any logical sense. And we'd be the first state in the country to have legislation as it relates to regulating AI. And frankly, the proponents, albeit did a great job in studying it and doing the best they could to try to make it work. But ultimately, it's a type of technology that we just don't even know the even infancy of what it could provide us or what could face us with AI. And so we passed that bill last night. And, you know, it puts a lot of penalties on small business owners that use AI and don't follow certain pretty burdensome requirements. And so it's, you know, again, we talk about noble intentions. Obviously, the intentions are there to be noble in regulating AI. But you know, that's the type of bill last night that I think down the road you're going to hear from a lot of businesses saying, hey, evidently, I'm out of compliance with AI in my hiring processes. I'm just trying to use this software or this format to help me in my hiring process. And because I didn't call up every single individual that was rejected based upon my AI software, I'm in CUTPA violation and therefore could face significant penalties from the state of Connecticut. It's little things like that. That, you know, that passed last night that I really think, you know, okay. I'd like to take a closer eye on because we talk about mandates on small businesses. It's small things like that we don't think much about.
That's true.
It could ultimately go a long way.
And what listeners need to do is just light up Democrats' phones over the next 2 weeks and even beyond. Steve, keep up the fight. We really appreciate your time this morning, and we'll do it again 2 weeks from today.
Thanks, Gary. Look forward to it, my friend.
You got it, brother. All right, we're coming right back to open phones. You, my friends, you, bottom half of the hour, every hour, are next. Into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair, has worked in journalism for nearly two decades prior to starting at USA Today. And in May of 2022, she served as a columnist and deputy editorial page editor for the Detroit News. This is where she spent 12 years as a member of the editorial board. She's written frequently on Michigan and national politics with a focus on education and cultural issues. Now, in addition to that work at in the Detroit News, her work has also appeared in the Wall Street Journal, the National Review, the Washington Examiner, Real Clear Politics, and the Weekly Standard, among several others. I'm not going to get into all that. By the way, it's Gary Byron, 9/11 here on this Friday Eve. Glad to have you with us. Let's welcome back to the show a conservative reporter over at USA Today, Ingrid Jacks. Ingrid, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Welcome back. Yes, we had such a great time the last time. We got a great response from you, and we wanted to get you back, especially since, you know, listen, a lot of news has come out since the last time you were with us. You recently wrote a really on-point article about the NPR editor who quit after really telling the truth about liberal bias in the media. You say it's time to defund them. I happen to agree.
Yes. And I mean, I think this piece by Uri Berliner just a couple weeks ago now in the Free Press is very insightful in multiple ways. You know, this is someone who worked at NPR for 25 years. He really loved the station, and he was just extremely concerned with what he saw happening there. And he had tried multiple times to reach out to higher ups, his bosses, and no one really gave him the time of day to hear his concerns about lack of ideological diversity. So I think it was very important that he did this. And as a result, he has since resigned. I think he was probably getting a lot of internal pressure.
Yeah, probably forced to resign, yeah.
Well, yeah, probably. But my call to defund them, I mean, I just think liberal bias in the media is not anything new, right? I mean, I think we've known about that for a long time, but NPR is different from, say, the Washington Post, New York Times, my paper, in that they do receive taxpayer dollars. And I don't know about you, but I don't want my money going to fund very one-sided journalism. If they want to do, you know, that kind of work, that's fine, but don't do it on my dime.
No, you nailed it. It's one thing if it's MSNBC or the New York Times, because if you don't like the paper, you don't buy it. If you don't like the channel, you don't watch it, you know, but, you know,
exactly.
So therefore they're not going to get your dollars. But when it's NPR and they're federally funded, well, yeah, you are. Your tax dollars are helping to in some way or shape or form, you know, fund them.
Sure.
And I what do you think, though? Why would he stir that pot? In other words, if he's in agreement with all that's being reported and really is not a conservative but more of a liberal, then why open up that can of worms? Especially, forget about the fact that he's jeopardizing his career. Just put that aside for a moment. It's in line with his own ideology. So why would he rock that boat?
I mean, maybe, but I think in what he wrote, and I listened to the interview that he did with the radio podcast with Barry Weiss, I mean, he laid out that he wasn't comfortable with the very one-sided reporting and choosing of stories that was happening. And he really started noticing this during, you know, Trump's presidency, the COVID pandemic. He noticed that this was not fair and balanced reporting, not whatsoever. And I don't think he was okay with that. And I think he's probably more liberal in the classical liberal sense, not the illiberalism that seems to have taken over the Democratic Party now. So I don't think he was okay with it. And that's why he knew he was risking his job, you know, this job he's had for 25 years in pointing this out. But, I mean, if you look at some of his specific examples, I mean, it's startling. I mean, he said that of editors working in D.C. at NPR headquarters, he went and looked this up, 87
yes.
were registered Democrats.
Out of 87.
Zero Republicans. Zero.
Yeah.
And, I mean, there's no way that with you know, that lack of ideological diversity that you're going to get anywhere close to fair news coverage. So I mean, that alone is something that NPR is going to have to address. But from the responses they've made thus far, it looks like they're going to change nothing.
I thought they were the party of diversity.
Diversity as they define it.
Ah, okay.
Diversity being a core value, but it's certainly not when it comes to, you know, your political point of view. So,
I
think that makes them look like hypocrites.
It's one thing when you point something out to somebody, and I think we've all been guilty to this in some degree, you know, where somebody points something out, like, you know, and then you're like, oh, wow, you know what? It didn't even occur to me, or I hadn't even realized. Thanks for bringing that to my attention. And then you'll begin to slowly integrate whatever change needs to be made.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, you know, he tells NPR there's 87 employees here and 87 Democrats, you know, and he gets chastised for it and maybe forced to even resign, allegedly. And it, as you just said a moment ago, and it causes no change. I think it's one thing to have realized that. It's another thing to have realized that or learned that and not make any change. So then what does that really, what message does that send? What does that tell us?
Well, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, no company is going to appreciate it if one of their employees publicly castigates them. You know, I don't think my company would appreciate it if I did that to them. But Berliner knew he was taking this risk in doing that. But I think where things could maybe change or maybe some forced change would be if Congress, you know, the American taxpayers just stand up and say, hey, you know, unless you, NPR, make a real commitment to ideological diversity and, you know, tackling this clear problem, you're not going to get any more of our money. And NPR tries to say, oh, well, very small percent of our funding comes from the federal government. That's true if you look at direct funding, but they get a lot of indirect funding.
Yeah.
As well. So that is far from true. They really depend on that federal funding. So I think that's where some real change could potentially happen. And if they refuse to change, fine. But then don't expect federal support.
So while that was happening at NPR, MSDNC hires Rhonda McDaniel, the former chairperson of the National Republican Party. Okay. And she gets hired because, well, hey, why not? Fox has Donna Brazile, has Juan Williams, and has had Geraldo Rivera, and there's a couple of others, actually. And I mean, I don't mean as just coming on as a guest. I mean on their payroll, you know, and Newsmax has a couple and so on and so forth. So, you know, I guess if they wanted to do the whole point counterpoint, and it might make good, you know, evening television.
Sure.
But so, hey, you know, it all starts with hiring one. Let's get Rhonda McDaniel in. But they're so afraid of her that they all started crying. Joey Scarborough, he had a tantrum live on air. And to the point where they couldn't even handle one.
Right. No, my favorite was Jen Psaki, who also
yes.
has a program now. She criticized Rhonda McDaniel coming on when Jen Psaki was hired by MSNBC while she was still press secretary for Biden. So, I don't buy their crocodile tears. But yeah, that was very embarrassing for MSNBC. And you know, they hired Rana, and then they almost immediately reneged on their contract with her. So, I mean, it's like either commit to the decision that you want more broad-based voices, or, you know, don't hire someone and then just
is there a place,
embarrassing.
Ingrid, is there a place on television or even in print where one can get truly objective, unbiased journalism? I thank God for talk radio. I hear this all the time. Even, you know, the internet, you can go to different websites. Although if you go to Yahoo News, I mean, even that's slanted. Are there any, where's the source for objective facts only, no spin, no rhetoric, no slant, straight on Facts, give me the facts, only the facts. Let the reader form his or her own opinion. Does that journalism exist anymore? If so, where?
Are you trying to get me in trouble here with my...
I don't mean to. I'm just asking you...
I'm kidding. I think it's getting increasingly hard to find objective reporting, you know, whether you mean conservative or liberal. I think in our online day and age, it's very easy to seek out publications that, you know, run commentary or news that, you know, fits into certain political viewpoints. So
what do you think people want, though? Do you think people want slanted news, or do you think they want, give it to me straight? Give me the good, the bad, the ugly. Even if I don't like it, I want to know the facts. Do you think people want to know the facts, or do you think people want to be pandered to with slanted news?
I mean, that's a really good question. I think there is still definitely an audience for as objective news as, you know, one can find. I think 100% objective is probably an impossible goal. I mean, every reporter, every columnist comes to his or her work with their own biases. You can't escape that. But I think it is possible to really try to be fair in not just the stories that are covered, but in the stories that are assigned. And I think some of our top newspapers in the country are trying to do that. And I think the ones that haven't been, I think under Trump, we saw a lot of newspapers go from reporting to advocacy.
Yes.
And the American people, they don't like it. And this led to a lot of distrust in the media, more than there ever was before, even. So,
yep.
I've noticed that a lot of the major newspapers are making a point to bring on more conservatives on the opinion side. Like, I came on 2 years ago at USA Today, and since then we've hired a few more conservative voices.
Oh, good.
So I think those are positive changes.
I wish the New York Times and the Washington Post would take a page out of USA Today's paper. Stay right there. I got to take a short break. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about some of the protests on these college campuses. More with Ingrid Jacks from USA Today right after this.
Attention contractors. Your one-stop shop for top quality hardscape, landscape, and construction needs is Superior Products. Essential job site equipment, site products, concrete and masonry supplies, Superior Products has you covered. Superior Products continues to expand and serve the construction industry. Go to 600 Derby Avenue in Seymour and experience the Superior difference. Superior Products, your premier destination for all hardscape and landscape needs. SuperiorNetwork.com.
Hi, this is Nick Kaplinson. At Dime Bank, we're all about community. It's who we are and who we've been for over 150 years. A community made up of customers, families, and friends. Of local business owners invested in helping communities thrive. Of employees committed to giving back beyond banking. If you're looking for a banking relationship that means a little more, come join our community at Dime. It's your choice, your bank, your Dime.
Dime Bank. Community banking lives here.
The voice of reason, Gary Byron and Joe the producer on the Talk of Connecticut, WDRC AM 1360 and 103.3 FM.
25 minutes after the hour of 9, our guest this hour is conservative reporter over at USA Today, Ingrid Jacks. Ingrid, let's shift our focus to the protests on college campuses around the country, including, you know, USC, who, you know, decided last week to cancel the valedictorian's commencement speech next month in May. This is the first time that USC has prevented its top graduate from speaking at the ceremony. What is going on at these institutions of higher learning? There was even a university in Austin, down in Texas, that you think is fairly conservative, but it's not. It's going the way of Harvard and Yale and Columbia and in New York University there.
Well, it's really quite something, you know, what's happening on these campuses, you know, to see, you know, our supposedly top elite universities and colleges home to these protests. You know, as the students themselves are saying, they're supporting Hamas.
Do they even know what they're protesting? Do they even know what they're protesting? Because I'm watching gays and lesbians, protesting Israel. They're pro Hamas, and I'm like, do you understand? That's the most moronic thing. You realize you'd be thrown off the closest building if they found out you were gay. This is how ignorant some of these kids are.
They are. And honestly, I think a lot of them don't really understand. I mean, I think there's a reason these protests, these encampments are spreading as fast as they are. I mean, it's just kind of the thing to do right now as a progressive college student. But what I think is, this is all very enlightening, while alarming, but it's very enlightening about what's been going on at our institutions of higher education. These young people are learning this ideology from somewhere, and as we've seen, a lot of these professors are out there with the students. I mean, they're learning it from these institutions, and we just talked about defunding NPR. I would say there's a real case to be made for defunding, stopping the flow of federal tax dollars, and especially in the form of federal student aid, grants, loans. Turn that off until these universities get this under control.
Well, the Biden administration is not going to do that. That we know that.
Well, under Biden, Biden's trying to throw money at these students.
He's pandering to them
in the form of student loan forgiveness.
Well, he sees what happened to his poll in Michigan, actually, your state there, mm-hmm. where during the primary, I mean, his numbers were terrible. So he's pandering to the Islamic base.
Well, I mean, it kind of looks like that's what he's doing. I mean, there's a significant vote for him in Michigan. We saw it in Wisconsin and some other states. This uncommitted vote, or just Democrats refusing to support him. And, with margins that are going to be no doubt very close in November, that could really hurt Biden. So, but if he starts changing his support of Israel at this point, I just think that's not going to look good.
Will he lose the Jewish vote? Will Jews not vote Democrat this November?
I think a lot of Jews right now in the U.S. feel very abandoned by the Democratic Party, and they're not pleased with what's playing out on universities, and I think they expected a lot more liberals, Democrats, to stand up for them, and they're not seeing that. So, yeah, I mean, I think I would hope that influences their decision of who to vote for this fall.
You talk about funding. I'm wondering endowments. I'm thinking of donations from, former graduates of these prestigious Ivy League schools, and if their donations are going to be, if not minimized, completely cease to exist, what will happen? I mean, will these universities finally wake up and say, because really it's all about money, and if their money dries up, well, I only have 20 seconds. You want to comment on that real quick?
I think that might be one of the more effective ways to wake up these university administrators and campuses. And just like I don't want my money going to fund one-sided news, I don't want my money going to help.
All right.
These young people who hate America.
I think a lot of people agree with you. I know I do. Conservative reporter at USA Today, Ingrid Jax, thanks again for your time this morning. I love when you join us. Let's do it again soon.
Yes, let's.
All right. You got it, girl. Have a great one. We're coming right back to Open Phones.
Fox News. I'm Chris Foster, former President Trump.